Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atata Kirtaye Vamsam Punya Kirti Kuru Vaha. Svayambhu Vasyapi Manur Adaya Amsam Sajanmana. Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe to you the descendants of Svayambhuva Manu, who was born of a part of the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, purport. Lord Brahma is a powerful expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Brahma is Jiva Tattva, he is empowered by the Lord, and therefore he is considered a plenary expansion of the Supreme Godhead. Sometimes it happens that when there is no suitable living being to be empowered to act as Brahma, the Supreme Lord himself appears as Brahma. Brahma is the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Svayambhuva Manu is the direct son of Brahma. The great sage Maitreya is now going to explain about the descendants of this Manu, all of whom are widely celebrated for their pious activities. Before speaking of these pious descendants, Maitreya has already described the descendants of impious activities, representing anger, envy, unpalatable speech, quarrel, fear, and death. Purposely, therefore, he is relating the history of the life of Dhruva Maharaja, the most pious king within this universe. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksu Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Sri Vrindavan Dham. I have now exactly one more week in the Holy Dham as my separation is increasing. It's just so wonderful here in the Dham. Anyway, I'm teaching this story every day, and I thought, especially as in the evening, I'm a little tired. I'm better today, but it's easier to discuss something that I studied before. So, Manvatara Ishakanta, we're studying the Manus, the history of the kings, because the Shastra wants to discourage false ego, the desire to control and enjoy world, and therefore it wants to expose those who control and who actually have achieved that to the maximum degree in the material world, so that we can see that all situations in the material world, even if they conform to our desires, are filled with duality and thus fear. And they're superficial, they don't really touch the heart. So all scriptures, all bona fide Puranas have this. I've discussed that before. I don't need to continue it too more deeply. And so he describes the descendants of Lord Brahma, beginning with the brahmacharis, those who don't actually continue the lineage, but make a mark in the lineage, because being unencumbered by worldly duties, they can, certainly the facility is there if one is qualified to engage without encumbrance in devotional service. And then also discussed irreligion. There were descendants of Brahma that were manifestations of irreligion. And Prati Sarga. Prati again, Sarga, creation. So they were causes of devastation. And therefore you have to hear about what will actually completely ruin and your spirituality and disconnect you from the soul. So those things were mentioned. And now he's going to discuss another one of his sons called Swayambhuva Manu, who is described here very significantly as Punyakirti, celebrated for his virtuous activities. And therefore, by hearing of them, we'll become pure. We advance by appreciation. We need exemplars. We need people who demonstrate the beauty of humility, the beauty of devotion. It's very important to hear, to inspire us for the right things. And especially he's famous for his chanting and hearing. That means practically from all his time, he spent most of the time chanting and hearing. And that should also humble us, because if we spend a few hours in a day hearing and chanting, we may begin to feel like we're very advanced. But if we combine the time just we spend eating and sleeping and so on, we'll discover that really, unfortunately, a large part of our day is spent in sense gratification. So it's nice to hear about the Punyakirti, celebrated for virtuous activities. And we'll do the next verse. Priyavrato ta padao shatarupa pate satao vasudevasya kalaya rakshayam jagatastitim. Swayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife Shatarupa. The names of the sons were Uttanapada and Priyavrata, because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are very competent to maintain and protect the citizens. Purport is said that these two kings, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, were specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unlike the king, great king Rishab, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So Kalaya means their expansions. Kalaya also means energy. It means specifically an energy to maintain and protect the world. It says raksham and stitao, to protect and maintain, which is very important for a king, because a king has to be empowered. Practically, it's impossible to rule without empowerment, especially to be a king. He practically has to be a Mahabhagavat because he has to satisfy everyone's desires. He has to keep people peaceful. To do that, you have to have a great insight that practically comes way beyond your intellect. And they're not going to speak much about Bhutanapad. We heard lots about Priyavrata. That will come in the fifth canto about his other son of Lord Brahma, Priyavrata. But Uttamapad, the main thing is he is the link to Dhruva Maharaj. And that's generally the way lineage is. Even in the Bhagavatam, when you have the Guru Parampara, there's hundreds of years between some of the people because they mention the ones who were prominent in maintaining the line. Text 8, Jaya Uta Nupadasya Suniti Surichistro Suruchi Prayasi Pratyur Netaraya Sukho Dhruva. King Uttanapada had two queens named Suniti and Suruchi. Suruchi was much more dear to the king. Suniti had a son named Dhruva, was not his favorite. So this is going to set up the story of a king. And he has two wives. He favors one. And therefore he favors the son of the favorite wife, who is younger. And he doesn't favor his older wife, who's also very young and beautiful, and his son. But because the elder son becomes the king, the favorite wife who wanted her son to become the king was very envious of that son called Dhruva. And very interesting, in the Sanskrit, the names, one, the wife who is very envious, her name is Suruchi. Ruchi means enjoyment, very much into enjoyment. And the other queen is named Suniti. Niti means good behavior. She's very much into good behavior. Purport, the great sage Maitreya wanted to describe the pious activities of the king. Priyavrata was the first son of Swayambhuva Manu, and Uttanapada was the second. But the great sage Maitreya immediately began to speak of Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Uttanapada, because Maitreya was very eager to describe pious activities. So Dhruva's life is exemplary, and therefore when Maitreya Muni, he's speaking to Vidura, and when he's trying to impress on him the stories of the Manus, or the great kings, he selects Dhruva, doesn't mention much about his father, because he was eager to hear something teach something very inspiring. The incidents in the life of Dhruva Maharaj were very attractive to the devotees. From his pious actions, one can learn how one can detach himself from material possessions and how one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penance. Very interesting story, we'll read on, but how Dhruva is insulted. His mother teaches him to, you know, if you want to fulfill your desire, you should seek God. And then so he's into seeking God, and his guru gives him the process to seek God, which is devotional service, which includes meditation and mantra chanting. But the reason he was doing it was for something material. But the practice itself was very forceful. Akama sarva karma va moksha kama udaradi divrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Akama, whether you have no desires, sarva karma, whether you have all desires, moksha kama, whether you desire liberation, divrena bhakti yogena, you should perform divrena bhakti. The brain is like the sun ray, very forceful, very concentrated bhakti, which Dhruva did. example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerity can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. So, interesting also that even a great king like Uttanapada, he's a great king and a great lineage, he can be subservient to his wife due to weakness arising out of affection. Too much affection. What you are attached to will control you. And what you're detached from can never control you. Therefore, a Brahmin has to be detached. Because if he's attached, then your attachment can control you by being taken away if you don't do what someone says. So the Brahmins had to be detached, otherwise they couldn't speak the truth. They can be compromised by attachment to money. And they can be bought off. Well, and not only so many things. I always like to give the example of Jayadvaita Swami as really one of the true Brahmins in the history of ISKCON because he's completely detached. And therefore, sometimes in terms of great opposition or great condemnation, or he speaks truth to benefit the Krishna conscious movement out of the... There's a whole history of him standing up, popular, unpopular... And because there's nothing more important than the truth to him. He's detached. You can't take away anything from him to stop him from seeking the truth. You can't control him because there's nothing he's attached to except the truth. And in previous days, the Brahmins, they can advise the king because they were very renounced, like Chandragupta for King Chandragupta, his minister was Chanakya Pandit. And the king was dependent on the minister's instructions. And in a second, he could leave. The king had no control over him and therefore couldn't control his speaking. We need independent people whose truth is not informed by their own desires. So many people, even intellectual people, their truth is so informed by their attachments that they can't actually speak the truth. We are to serve the truth. The truth is not to serve our desires. And the truth that serves our desires is not the truth. Too many people use so-called truth to serve their desires. But it never turns out to be the truth because it's compromised. We should serve the truth. That's the first step in humility. When you recognize that something higher than what you want is what's right. And what's right is connected with the absolute truth. That takes humility. You can't separate humility and knowledge. Text 8. Ekada suruche putram ankamaropya lalayam uttamam nararupshantam dhruvam raja bhyanandita. Once upon a time, King Uttanapada was patting the son of Suruchi Uttama, placing him on his lap, so the younger queen's son. Dhruva Maharaj was also trying to get on the king's lap, but the king did not welcome him. So this is devastating. Because there's nothing more than one wants in a proper family than the affection and recognition of his father. So this is truly a tremendous tragedy. And the king would have picked him up, but the co-wife was watching. And she didn't want Dhruva on that lap. She wanted to make it very clear that this son, the older son, who has the rights to be king, will never sit on your lap. And don't you dare put him there. And the king was so attached. The king was so attached that He neglected his son. The truth is you should protect your son, but your attachment dictated you couldn't. So a man of character always performs his duty, regardless of what his attachments are. And when you follow your attachments, your life is doomed. Because suspiciousness comes specifically from Dharma, or doing what's right. And once you compromise that, no good will come of it. Because a dharma disconnects you from the soul. And when you get disconnected from the soul, you get disconnected from happiness. Because happiness is a flourishing of the good soul. Couldn't do anything because he was henpecked and his wife was there. Tatcha kirshavanantam sapatyas tanayam dhuvam suruchi shindhitauragya sirsham ahatigarvata. While the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child. With great pride, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. The king, of course, was equally affectionate towards both his sons, Uttam and Dhruva. So he had a natural inclination to take Dhruva as well as Uttam on his lap. Now, because of his favoritism towards his queen, Suruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj despite his feelings. King Uttanapada's feelings were understood by Suruchi, and therefore with great pride she began to speak about the king's affection for her. This is the nature of a woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favorite and is especially affectionate to her, she takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as the family of Swayambhuva Manu. Therefore, it is concluded that the feminine nature of woman is present everywhere. So she's irsham, she's jealous. Atikarva, being very proud, and therefore she spoke so the king would hear. Basically, what she's going to tell them is, you want to be the king, Dhruva? Then you have to be born from the queen. And the queen is not just any wife of the king. The queen is a particular wife of the king, and I am that queen, not your mother. Savatsa nipater tisyam bhavana rudam arati apihito mayayatvam kukshavapi nipatmaja. Queen Suruchi told Dhruva Maharaj, my dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or on the lap of the king. Surely you are also the son of the king, but because you did not take birth from my womb, you are not qualified at all to sit on your father's lap. Purport, Queen Suruchi, very proudly informed Juvaj that to be the king's son was not the qualification for sitting on the lap of the king. Rather, this privilege was dependent on one having taken birth from her womb. In other words, she indirectly informed Dhruva Maharaj that although he happened to be born of the king, he was considered an illegitimate son because of his birth from the womb of the other queen. So, this is so harsh. Words are just so harsh. They're worse than putting a spear through someone's body. Anyway, someone was just speaking to me about, anyway, there was a problem in a family. And the words were so harsh. and harsh words are more painful than physical ailments or weapons. They pierce the heart. We all know that. There's nothing such so devastating as harsh words directed towards our being and esteem. But on the other hand, we see how the Lord's internal potency works even within the illusion of people, because, you know, generally we try for a normal situation. We try to have stability in our lives because it facilitates the peaceful mind required for realizing the absolute truth. But it's really hard just to quantify exactly like that. Because sometimes, and this example is, if he had normal life, he would have sat on the throne and he wouldn't have met God. So sometimes we can't tell, sometimes when blessings, when our difficulties on the material platform are the greatest blessings, and God sees this. God has a standard. Sometimes we say, why is God doing this to us? But what is God doing? God has a higher standard. He knows that real happiness is our consciousness and not the way things move around us. And sometimes to bring us to the proper form of consciousness, as his mercy, to bring us to a much higher standard of satisfaction and happiness than the world of duality and superficiality, He disturbs that world. So from our perspective, why is God doing this? But from his perspective, he has a reason why he's doing this. He's bringing us to a higher level of consciousness. And we won't get off that faith in material things, that faith in enjoyment and control. Because faith is where you seek your pleasure. So unless sometimes the place where we seek our pleasure has to be so disturbed that we can't get our pleasure there, and we have no choice but to seek the happiness of the soul. Lo si patanatmanam anyasi garbha sambitam inam veda bhavanyasya dhulabert. My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. Purport, the small child, Dhruva Maharaj, was naturally affectionate towards his father, and he did not know there was a distinction between his two mothers. This distinction was pointed out by Queen Suruchi, who informed him that since he was a child, he did not understand the distinction between the two queens. This is another example of Queen Suruchi's pride. So difficult circumstances are a blessing. If life was normal, he'd sit on the throne, and he wouldn't be where he is now. And he wouldn't have heard about God. He wouldn't got his darshan. So that message is always there in the Bhagavatam, that what is a blessing, what is a curse. The blessing is what brings you closer to Krishna. And the curse is what brings you further from Krishna. So sometimes material things can be a curse, even if you get what you want. If it disconnects you from the soul, like so many rich, famous celebrities, they have what they want, but there's no hope because there's no happiness there. Tapasadadya purusham tasyaiva nugrahena me garve tam sadyamanam ya yadichasina pasanam. So this really entered into Dhruva's heart in many ways. Not only did his father neglect him, not only did his stepmother say harsh words, but his father, who is the source of his protection, failed to act. And he had a spirit of a kshatriya. So sometimes it's healthy that that spirit is developed. Prabhupada talked once, I think, when there's some, I don't know, something happened in Southeast Asia with Cambodia. And Prabhupada said if the American president became Krishna conscious, if he was a real kshatriya, he said, if you harm one hair on the head of a man, there'll be fight. Happy are those kshatriyas whose battles come unsought. The one who is honored, this honor is worse than death. And this is how he was trained. So this just deeply affected his heart and created the spirit in him that, okay, I can't sit on your lap. I want better than your lap. I can't be the king. I want a planet greater than my grandfather, Lord Brahma. Okay, so I can't sit on my father's lap and be the king. Then I want a planet, I want a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma. Pasraja Purusham Tasyeva Nugrahename Kave Tvam Saryatmanam Yasya Dichasin Nipasanam. If you'd all desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of God in Narayan. And then when you are favored by him because of such worship, you shall have to take your next birth in my womb. Purport, Suruchi was so envious of Dhruva Maharaj that she indirectly asked him to change his body. According to her, first of all, he had to die, and then only then would it be possible for Dhruva Maharaj to ascend to the throne of his father. So anyway, she was the queen. She had some type of pedigree. Otherwise, her anger would have been completely uncontrolled. But she's even speaking some philosophy. Maitreya uvacha matu sapnya sudurakti vidha swasamusha dandahato. Wait. Matu sapatya sudurakti vidha swasamusha dandahato yatahi eva nishantam pitaram sanavakam vidama matu puradum sukasam. The sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, as a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes very heavily. Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. When he saw that his father was silent and did not protest, he immediately left the palace and went to his mother. Father was so in illusion that he took no action, although it was his duty. And the father's duty is to give shelter to his son, but he couldn't. But mothers will always offer help and protection. They're the most reliable shelter, so he went to his mother. Tam nishashvantam, tam nishash, tam nishvasantam, uritadarotam,
Sunitya utsanga udhaya bhavam Nishamya tat paura mukhan nitantam Saviyate yad gaditam sapatya. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger and he was crying very grievously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap, while the palace residents who had heard all the harsh words of Suruchi related everything in detail. Thus, Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. These are overwhelming symptoms of distress. And when Dhruva reached, he was overwhelmed. These are symptoms of incredible distress. He was crying grievously. His lips were trembling in anger. And Suniti lifted her son on his lap to give shelter. But then the palace residents who saw it related to her everything in detail, and she became even more aggrieved. Pain arising from weapons and physical injury is easier to withstand than pain arising from harsh words. She's devastated. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience. She began to burn as if in a forest fire, and her grief, she became just like a burnt leaf and so lamented. The forest fire, when the tree burns, first the water comes out, and then it really becomes consumed. So similarly, in grief, we're burning, but the tears come out. So it's unbearable. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears, and thus she spoke. So she's so distraught that she can't advise her son. Which is Krishna's arrangement, because somehow the destiny of Dhruva is to go to the forest. So she's so aggrieved she can't even convince him not to go to the forest. But it's interesting because really we want stable life, stable family life, make the mind peaceful for spiritual life, but who can say with God's mercy? Because if it's too pleasing, one may never want to leave. So sometimes the mercy of family situations is that it's a little painful and difficult. So it's a very fine line, because being painful and difficult can debilitate one, and usually it does, so that they have a difficult time in spiritual life. And when it's stable, it can become peaceful for spiritual life, but the stability can go to a point where one becomes overly attached and comes into the illusion that my home is my eternal abode and that my family is my eternal associate. And that's the curse of family life. If one is not careful, one doesn't want to leave a situation which is temporary and ultimately not satisfying. So here we get an example where really dysfunction and bad family life is facilitating him, because it was nice. He would never leave. He would sit on his father's lap. So for a devotee, there's no bad or good. You know, what's a devotee's karma? There's no bad or good karma, because everything brings one closer to Krishna. There's no good or bad. The devotee goes beyond duality. There's no good or bad. Everything brings one closer to Krishna. Purport. When a man is aggrieved, he feels exactly like a burnt leaf in a forest fire. Sunuti's position was like that. Although her face was as beautiful as a lotus flower, it dried up because of the burning fire caused by harsh words to her co-wife. Be very, very careful what you speak to others. It could be one of the most violent things to say the wrong thing. Jagam swasanti vijanasya param apasyati balakam ahabala manmangalam tata pareshu maska bhute jano yat paradukha dastat. She was also breathing very heavily and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain." So she's Suniti. So her exalted nature is to forgive. That's a saintly nature. That story of the two Brahmins going across the water and there's a scorpion bites one of the Brahmins, and it falls in the water and the Brahmin picks up the scorpion and again it bites him and falls in the water and then he picks it up and again. And when he goes to the other side, the other Brahmin says, "Why did you do that, you fool? Don't you know that it's the nature of a scorpion to bite?" And the Brahmin said, "Yes, but it's a nature, but my nature is to forgive. Justified hate or resentment. But it's still hate. It's still against the basic principle of yoga, which is ahimsa. And it clouds one's perception, and the whole thing of spiritual life is to purify the mind so you can see truth. So it puts you in a very, very dark, unrealized place, not seeing the broader picture of things in so many ways, that it's not the person who's the agent of your suffering. He's not the real agent. It's ultimately God and responding to our own activities. What the karma is God in the past has viewed our consciousness and seen how we are doing things that are disconnecting us from the soul. Based on what God sees, he puts us in different conditions to help us learn our lessons. There's so many ways you can transcend. And so she has some exalted nature. But the interesting point, she says, there is no remedy for this. So God often puts us in those situations where there's no remedy on the material platform. Sometimes someone has a terminal disease, there's no remedy. Sometimes someone gets fired from something, there's no remedy. Some relationship breaks up, there's no remedy. And therefore, the only solution then is to change our consciousness. That's a great impetus for spiritual life when our material, protective, and controlling agents fail us. Then we have to take shelter, not in our destiny for happiness, but our free will. And happiness cannot come without the exercise of our free will. Happiness is love, and love is intention. It's willing. It's to will to serve. So, she says, worship God. That's the only remedy. When things are beyond your control, the only remedy is worship God. And you cannot lose. Because even if it's impossible, God can do the possible. So either you'll get what you want, or by worshiping God, your heart will change in a way that you will be satisfied and no longer hanker for so many things. Or, in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, God will fulfill your desire, but in such a way you'll become detached and give it up. So when there's no remedy, you have to worship God. And there's no remedy for death. There's no remedy for old age. There's no remedy for disease. So we worship God. And then we can transcend all the bad karma. Like, for example, someone's dying, and he's fighting and fighting and fighting, but then he sees it's God. And just wants to serve God's will, even if it means to die. So one transcends the false ego, which is the cause of the experience of the illusion of non-existence called death. So he comes to a point, we all come to a point where there's no remedy. We can't change the destiny. But we can change the destiny and how we react. Your destiny may be to have a bad stomach, but by your free will, you eat simple foods and it never bothers you. Or by your free will, you indulge yourself and get sick. Either way, the karma, the bad karma is coming. One, from not eating the delicious things that you attach to. And anyway, I guess I'm starting to fade out now, so I'm going to have to stop now. Would anyone like to ask a question? All right, would anyone like to say hello and we can end for today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Hanan. Obeisances.
Thank you. Nice to hear from you.
My question is refers also to last week. You spoke about how Dhruva Maharaj's story was one of Lord Chaitanya's favorite, and he would hear it again and again. Can you explain a little bit more why, what's the reason?
What's the reason he heard it?
Why this favorite? Like, what is it trying to teach us by...
All I was saying is that Gadadhar, this is one of the things that he heard. And I think one of the things he wants to teach us is that, you know, all parts of the Bhagavatam are inspirational, even for one who wants to pursue Raghunuga Bhakti. Because when you have a relationship with Krishna, then you can appreciate Krishna in so many different aspects. I gave the example when Tamal Krishna Maharaj was worshiping Ram in Mumbai every morning, and Narayan Maharaj became confused. He said, "Why are you worshiping Ram? We're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, you know? And if we worship Ram, we think, oh, how Krishna is a king." So when you awaken your relationship with Krishna, then everything inspires that. It's just I gave the example of my mother, or a mother. She becomes inspired in a motherly love if her son gets a big position, like Aishwarya. She'll become inspired in a motherly love if her son has a very romantic relationship with a beautiful lady. So everything inspires that relationship that one has. So the Bhagavatam is meant to awaken our relationship with Krishna. And I myself, I was lecturing on the 10th canto very much, but I'm having personal experience. I'm studying this, and the wonderful devotional feelings, and Dasya Ras, the mood of service, is the foundation of any relationship with God. So when you hear about the devotees and their love and God and his mercy, it's very, very inspiring. Even when Sukadeva Goswami, well, that's another thing. But anyway, it's very inspiring to hear about the mood of service for anyone, even someone who's pursuing Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotion. He's hearing about his Lord, who is a king, who is Narayan, who is Vishnu. But it's still inspiring, because he's not having that mood of love. We'll see throughout the Bhagavatam that Bhishma Dev, who was in the mood of Dasyarath, was appreciating the gopis. And so was Akura, who was in the mood of Dasyarath. So why were they hearing about the gopis if they were in the mood of servitude? Because whatever relationship one is in, he loves to hear about his Lord, no matter what he's doing, and it inspires that relationship. That's the only thing I can think of. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. Yes, thank you.
I didn't have a speciality why you heard those particular katas, although they're very beautiful katas. Anybody else would like to ask a question? Anybody else like to say hello, and then we'll sign off for today? Anybody else? Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Wonderful. Hear from you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Kishori.
And Priya.
Priya, Hare Krishna. We'll see you all very, very soon. Right? We'll see you all very soon. That's great. Okay. Thank you all
for
listening. I will, kind of sign off now, a bunch of co-producers.